Welcome to the PR Moment podcast. Produced in association with the Marketeers Network.
On the show today, I'm talking to Victoria Cross, Managing Partner of Instinctive. There's a huge amount of discussion in the business world about the importance of ESG as an investment criteria, but it's also clearly really important for communicators. And on today's show, we're going to be looking at why ESG is so important for modern communications professionals. Before we start, thanks as ever to our PR Moment podcast sponsors, the PRCA. And the final deadline for the PR Moment Awards is on March the 26th. So do take a look at the PR Moment Awards website for all the details. And if you are interested in ESG and you haven't already seen it, there is a free to attend PR Moment webinar on what is your ESG risk on April the 28th. Tickets are, as I say, free and available from the homepage of prmoment.com. Victoria, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me. It's great to be here.
So go on, let's start on an outliner, Cherie. For listeners who are not aware, just tell us what ESG is and what it's all about.
Well, at its simplest, the acronym stands for Environmental, Social and Governance Factors. But what it actually is all about is it's a discipline. It's the discipline of preparing investor-focused information on financially material ESG risks.
So what does that mean from... So why has it become so important? Because it's one of those things, it's been around a little while, hasn't it? It's not... Although there's a temptation to think that it's all new and sparkling, one of the nice things about ESG is it's been around as a thing for about 20 years or so. But why has it sort of come to the fore at the moment, would you say?
Yeah, absolutely. It really has been around for quite a while. I've been working in this discipline for almost 20 years now. But I clicked my heels with joy when the front page of the Financial Times talked about responsible capitalism. And I think for me, that was the tipping point when boards across the world, not just in the UK, began to really sit up and take notice. And, you know, that was driven by their investors. But it's not just a board level concern now. It's permeating right down to all different levels of businesses and their supply chains.
OK, well, we'll come on to that in a moment. But just, I mean, is it ESG's started really at the investment, at investor level as a criteria for investment, didn't it? And that as a criteria for investment, it's become ever more important. Is that fair to say? And until now, arguably it's the most important, is it? Is that fair to say, or is that an exaggeration?
I think it varies from investor to investor, to be perfectly honest. It's certainly been increasing in prominence. And there's some really strong data out there that, to say at a fund level, those funds that are more heavily invested in ESG perform more strongly than those that might not have such a keen eye on it. So it's certainly been increasing in focus. And there's a lot of data to show that it's of merit when it comes to investment. But it's not the only thing driving investment decisions, of course. And I think the key thing here is to make sure that companies really do understand their investor base, that they're having regular dialogue and engagement with them so that they know which of the ESG factors are of most material importance to their investors, and that they're able to satisfy their requirements and answer those questions on those factors.
So it's not just a financial PR element to this. It's a wider opportunity, I suppose, for the communications sector as a whole.
Absolutely, absolutely. For anyone who's working in communications at or near the boardroom, this is a discipline that is only going to get bigger and more prominent in years to come. So from our perspective, we're having as many conversations with public policy audiences as we are with customers, as we are with consumers. And we're blending all of those different conversations together to give our clients real insight into the different ESG-related factors that are going to make the most material difference to their business going forwards.
So just talk me through the logic on that then. So it's clearly there's a body of evidence that says if you prioritise ESG as a company and perform well to ESG standards, you do well financially, if you see what I mean. So that's therefore important to investors and from a financial PR perspective. But what's the connection then between why it's important to other stakeholders within the business? Because then it starts to overlap with things around sustainability and purpose. And so where does ESG and purpose and sustainability, it sort of all, it overlaps, stroke, does it all get a bit confused?
Another great, great question, and one that we're helping our clients navigate all the time. And the way I tend to describe it is the ESG aspect that we're talking about for investors is about measuring outputs. It's about creating a scorecard that an investor can very easily compare and contrast with another organization. When you start getting into some of those other audiences, you're explaining what is at the heart of the business, what is driving its core purpose. And at that point, you begin to talk about outcomes. You're driving the future narrative of that business based on what those different stakeholders believe in and want and think are important. And I think, we've seen a real increase in that wider dialogue being necessary. So take climate change, for example. 18 months ago, as we were watching pictures of forest fires reaping through Australia, and we had Greta and her great body of colleagues, fighting for the climate change cause, suddenly this became interwoven into corporate narrative. Now, ESG has always been measuring carbon in an output measure, looking at how much carbon or energy a company is using or emitting. But when you start talking about purpose, you look about what changes the organization is driving going forward and how connected into, say, the climate change agenda that business is.
And for companies, there's been some some of the most vocal, most high profile investors in the world have talked about why ESG is important for them, hasn't it? So just talk us through that a little bit, because that really, you talked a bit about a tipping point earlier, but that's been another injection of momentum into ESG and what it's all about, hasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the reason they have talked about it and the reason they see it so important is it's a very good general measure of how well a business is being run. Generally, if you're taking ESG seriously, certainly the clues in the G, the governance of your business is generally solid. Now, it doesn't work in every case. There are obviously examples where companies have scored very highly on an ESG scorecard, but then have still had systemic governance failings. But fundamentally, what investors want is that reassurance that there's a strong management team, a strong business focus, and that they're committed to doing the right things for their stakeholders. And all of those become very easy to assess if they're performing well in terms of ESG.
Okay. So I suppose there's a couple of questions there then. So how, if I just think of the E and the S and the G separately, are they interlinked? I mean, they are interlinked, but they're also separate, aren't they? So how do you, it's quite an interesting one. If you're an in-house commerce person, you're thinking, right, I'm at the beginning of my ESG journey or not, which one do you break off first? Or where are the easy wins? And how do you attack this ESG problem if you're in-house?
The starting point has to be, A, what the business is trying to achieve more fundamentally. What is the business strategy that has already been decided upon by that business? And then asking yourself some really difficult questions, actually. So why does ESG even matter for us? What can it do in terms of mitigating a risk for us? What can it do in terms of opening up an opportunity? And once you begin to understand the why, you can think, right, okay, so from that perspective, which aspects are most material? So for some organizations, it's absolutely about the E, because they are large manufacturing companies, or they're doing an awful lot of business travel. There are things that they can do to understand and better mitigate the E impacts of their business. With others, predominantly, let's say, professional services, for example, it's much more about the S. Their direct impact of what's happening in their offices is probably much lower in terms of the E, but much higher in terms of the social impact or the contribution that they can have through their clients' work and helping influence their clients on the E. So it's about sitting down and understanding what's material to your business, what's material to your stakeholders. And then the G piece is about how well you're going to do those things and how well you're going to monitor them, measure them, and whether you've got the right systems and process in place to ensure that you meet whatever commitments that you're setting out to achieve. So there is no one size fits all, but if you start with a business strategy and start thinking about how you can deliver for your different stakeholders for the future of the business, then the answers of which to prioritise first start to become clearer.
Is the governance bit the easiest bit, if you like? Because is that, as a company, that's sort of what you should be doing that anyway. And I've no doubt going through a checklist type thing, it uncovers things that you should be doing better and all that type of thing. But that's probably the easiest bit, is it, or not?
Arguably, it's the easiest bit to tick the box, absolutely. And of course, if you're a listed business, there's levels of governance that you're already having to adhere to. And in certain sectors, there are additional layers of governance, like financial services, for example. But what can be more challenging is how you're actually going to embed some of the more genuine E&S into the governance piece. So how are you actually going to measure your board, your individual members that are responsible for the delivery of this on aspects of E and S, when actually they're more used to being measured on financial performance alone? So the more balanced scorecard to how this is going to work and what level of scrutiny you're going to put onto this at a board level to make sure that it's a genuine, authentic thing that's happening in your business, that you're not just filling in a checklist every quarter.
Well, that was going to be my next question, actually. How do you move from that ESG checklist? Because a lot of people I've spoken to about ESG, you've got the checklist, right? And that's a sizable document, and there's various different types of checklists, which we'll come on to later. But the but actually, you're going through it and you're ticking, hopefully. But it opens up windows, or it can, if you want to. If you see the opportunity, it can open up windows into how you operate and how you behave as a company, which from a communications perspective can get really, really interesting, can't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's back to that point of really understanding the why, okay? If there's a really decent commercial reason to step away from it purely being a tick box exercise, then you'll get that board traction. So, you know, is it going to access new sources of funding for us as an organisation? Is it going to open new markets? Is it going to help engagement with our suppliers and get some more longer term and some stickier relationships and enable a different type of supplier conversation? Or is it going to help us sell more product? Okay. If the answer to any of those is yes, then it's easy for it to evolve from a tick box into something much more compelling.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, I guess, well, ESG has a higher prominence within the FTSE 100 than it does within the FTSE 250. Do you see what I mean? To what extent, and listen, I'm sure you don't have the exact, you don't have a number for this, but as a rule of thumb, of the FTSE 100, how is everybody taking it as a way to audit and see opportunity within their business, or are quite a few of them using it as a tick box exercise to please investors, would you say?
I think the honest answer is it's evolving. As you say, it's difficult to put my finger on the exact number without having the conversations with all of those companies. But fundamentally, there are definitely some that are still at that tick box place. But increasingly, companies are aware that there's an opportunity out there. Yeah. And there really is. And that by aligning kind of core purpose with what their stakeholders want to hear from them, with what their investors need to be satisfied about, is only a logical and sensible way forward. This is only going to become a bigger issue. So even those companies that probably started off ticking a box, I think are evolving, but they're evolving at different rates, and there are definitely different appetites, depending largely on all the different stakeholder requirements and which sector, which type of investors they have. So there is still a real range and a lot to play for in the comm space in terms of helping people on that different journey.
And I suppose the other thing is that the best practice is evolving pretty quick as well, isn't it? So you might have started doing a tick box 18 months ago. Well, now you can't do that anymore, or the tick box is a bit more severe and a bit more in detail.
You're absolutely right. So a great example of that is, you know, the race to carbon zero. You know, I mean, it's rapidly becoming kind of rule six to start the game. You know, there isn't actually much differentiation in setting a carbon target anything further out than 2030 in some sectors at the moment now. So, yeah, very quickly, the best practice moves on. And what was differentiating 6 months ago becomes kind of also ran now. Right. So it's now about actually how can I be net positive and how can I make that real difference? And I think COP26 at the end of the year is only going to shine a further light on that. It'd be quite interesting to see how corporates do evolve their own strategies in line with, I think, what is only going to become a more relevant conversation point as the year goes on.
And what's the, well, first of all, what's, if you're not a listed company, you know, B Corp is quite a movement these days, isn't it? Is that where that debate is, if you're not listed, or is ESG also relevant for non-listed companies?
I think it's highly relevant, but it does vary depending on the sector and depending on where that company is at. You know, for some companies, even, you know, relatively new companies that are absolutely capitalising on the opportunities of different funding streams, you know, renewable energy is a prime example of this. You know, some really exciting fast growth startups coming into the market as new entrants in this space. For them, it's wholly about what their business is all about. Right. There's other smaller businesses, maybe family-owned businesses that have been around for many, many years and are really having to think about what is our social role. You know, we're incredibly proud of our business. We've grown strongly. We want to probably remain private, but we do want to have a social role, whether that's to help with, I don't know, say planning permission, or whether that's to help with retaining customers, or from a B2B perspective, there are benefits and advantages. They might not be as clear on the face as some of the investor pressures that the larger businesses are receiving, but we've certainly seen them enjoying reputational gains by being private companies that are embracing ESG and almost kind of reflecting some of the bigger company reporting in what they're doing, albeit on a private company scale.
So anywhere where you need investment is obviously really important, but also on a wider, but on that wider stuff you covered there, I mean, that's where it very quickly starts overlapping into purpose and sustainability. And I mean, I suppose in a way it doesn't really matter what you call it, does it? But is that, I'm not missing anything there. There is a pretty quick, once you come out of the investment world, and I know that ESG then starts feeding into how you behave as a company, but then there is an overlap into what we used to call CSR, purpose as well, and sustainability, and all that type of softer stuff, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, it really is a myriad of different terms. And I think if there's a job for communicators right now in this, it's helping improve the literacy of what these different terms mean with our clients. So we can be talking at cross purposes because a client's asking for ESG, but actually what they want is sustainable business. Or they want to know more about purpose, and yet they haven't actually ticked the basics of ESG. So I think as communicators, for us to be fully conversant with the language that we choose to use and to make sure that we and our clients are kind of literally on the same page when we're having those conversations, it becomes very clear. And if you start with, why are you as a business wanting to do this? You usually get quite a few answers to what it actually is that the clients are talking about, or indeed your internal colleagues if you're working in-house as well, just to make sure that everybody understands this. I mean, CSR, I'm glad to see the back of that as a phrase, but it was, again, one of the most misunderstood phrases around, and it got very confused, and then along came sustainability, and that means different things to different people as well, and that's why we called our service Reinventing Responsibility, because actually corporates taking responsibility for all of these different things could not be more important in such a dynamic environment as we're operating in right now.
So if I've just listened to you talk there, but actually, ESG, because there's that body of research behind it, and perhaps some more, some slightly harder KPIs, it's quite a good place to start, isn't it, as a business? If you're thinking about developing your sustainability credentials, or improving your, or defining your purpose, ESG is quite a good way to work out where you're at, isn't it? Is that fair to say?
I think it it's fair to say from, again, from an output measures perspective. So I think from the bottom up, absolutely, it'll give you a really thorough benchmark, if you like, for where you are as a business. But actually, to fundamentally take a step back and start with why we're here as a business, what it is we're here to do, you get more exciting and more interesting answers more quickly. So depending on, you know, what kind of business you are, it's not a bad place to start, but one without the other leaves a bit of a gap.
Okay. So when you're talking to clients, you deal with the ESG and purpose quite quickly, that one impacts the other, right? So it's part of the same conversation, I imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's about authenticity at the end of the day. So purpose without any measurement isn't very purposeful. And equally, you know, measuring lots of stuff without a purpose doesn't have a lot of point to it. So it's about kind of unpeeling the layers of the onion almost to really delve beneath what can become a tick box exercise quite quickly, but equally has got some real power to help propel the business to the next stage of its journey. So yeah, we do often have quite holistic conversations, but we do also recognize that companies need to get on and do stuff, and they still do need to satisfy those specific ESG requirements.
And what are investors looking for in ESG performance then? Is it improvement? Well, I suppose it depends on the criteria, does it? I mean, some things you've just got to have, and then other things you can presumably show a year-on-year progress report, can you? It's like, well, as long as you're not going backwards, then that's well, it depends who you're up against and for investment, I suppose. But is that how it works? Or is it a bit more yes or no than that, if you know what I mean?
I mean, it really varies from investor to investor. And I think the easiest way of answering that is to say, engage, talk to them, understand who's on your share register, understand at an institution level what they are interested in and what they're looking at measuring, and make sure your narrative satisfies them. But fundamentally, you're right. There are certain aspects that are, you know, for certain investors are kind of the no-brainers, if you like, and will be reasons not to invest if you can't satisfy certain criteria. And with the private equity sector, they're obviously looking to track performance. So it might actually be quite attractive to have someone that, you know, isn't scoring fantastically well on ESG when they enter a fund and a portfolio, and as they go through the journey, the PE investor can really be seen to adding that layer of value. Yeah. If they're closer to the end of the investment cycle, then they just need to make sure that they're going to get the optimum exit valuation, and ESG is proven time and again to be a key part of that process and that cycle. So depending on the investor, again, a retail investor sat at home, you know, deciding what they're going to invest in next, will have different criteria again. So the main thing is, depending on who that audience is, know and understand and engage with that audience, and then make sure you're satisfying their particular requirements. And that's why this stuff's hard, yeah? Because it moves, you know, 6 months on, that might be a different set of requirements. And it's about keeping engaged and keeping really close to who it is you need to understand and that you want to invest in your stock.
No, but I've done a bit of research on ESG for the last 6 months, because I reckon I didn't know enough about it. But when you start looking at the various standards out there, it's, oh, I don't know, confusing might be being a bit harsh, but there's a lot, aren't there? And it's kind of hard to work out. I mean, some of them are a bit more lightweight than others, aren't they? I mean, there's the PRI from the UN is probably the easiest fence to jump over, isn't it? But then they get a little bit more stringent depending on which one you seem to choose. But go on, just talk us through that world, because it's a bit complicated.
Absolutely, it's incredibly complicated, and it's like those sectors that often, you know, the kind of regulation and the guidelines don't keep up with the pace. So you're right, there are conflicting frameworks and standards. It is confusing, and our advice, and we get asked this daily, you know, which one should we go for? What should we do? Our advice is always, start with why you're doing this. Start with what's most material to your business. Decide what the end point could look like, and then find the framework that best suits you. Do not let the tail wag the dog. because then you do get into that tick box type exercise where you're doing things potentially for the wrong reasons to satisfy the form, to be able to, you know, tick the box, literally. While they're really, really useful tools to help you benchmark and to help you understand your business better, actually the better place to start is without the framework and then build up towards one. Of course, your investors will have a view on which ones they're using, and depending which market you're listed in, there'll be different ones that have different dominance. But if you can start from where you need to be as a business, again, it's to that authenticity point of making sure that you're doing the things that are going to add the most value and frankly, get the most traction in the boardroom, to be honest. That's what it's got to come down to.
And just talk us through some of the ones that are out there, just so people can read up on them when from the show.
So I think, you know, if you were to start with a kind of base level, taking a look at something like the PRI, as you said, you know, so understanding, you know, the basic kind of UN Sustainable Development Goals would be a great place to start. You know, they provide a really useful overview. If you choose to follow them at goal level, they can give you some interesting topics on which to hang your sustainability program. And then there are more formal programs like GRI, where you can actually get quite embedded quite quickly in lots of detailed questions, but it's quite far-reaching and quite broad. And then you can get much more specific with something like TCFD, which is all about the financial disclosures that are going to be material and specific regarding climate for your business. I mean, there are literally so many out there. Yeah. But I think that TCFD, GRI, UN, Sustainable Development Goals would be a very good kind of first point. I mean, we could have a 2-hour podcast on just the topic.
The TCFD one, which could do with a better name, couldn't it? But that's the one that's going to come in as increasingly important from a governance and legal perspective, right?
That's right. And it is definitely one to take a lot of note of. And if you're looking to set targets and commitments now, well, you might not wish to become, you know, signed up this year, to actually start to use some of the framework and the thinking and the logic in your organisation or your client's organisation wouldn't be a bad place to start. But there is a lot of work to do there. So it's not to be taken lightly. And there are other frameworks that give you an easier kind of entry level on which to start. But yeah, absolutely, it's coming down the track and is well worth being aware of, whether or not you decide actually it's the right starting point for our journey. For some, it's just a bit too hard, too fast to sign up in year one.
But on the flip side, if in 3 years' time, if you're a FTSE 100 company and you don't have you haven't adhered to that TCFD standard, you're going to have a problem, aren't you? Is that? I mean, that's fair to say, isn't it?
Absolutely. So 3 years' time, absolutely. So you should be aligning yourself now to begin to prepare for that. But all I'm saying is that it doesn't mean that in the first year you have to absolutely complete every aspect of it. So yeah, absolutely, it's coming. Be aware of it, be familiar with it, and start to basically not do anything that will prevent you from reporting in that way in the future.
Right.
But I would just urge people not to feel overwhelmed by the enormity of that task, because there are other more simple stepping stones that you can take along the way.
But from a governance and legal perspective, that it's going to start getting cranked up. The pressure's going to start getting cranked up quite quickly, isn't it? Because you are going at some, and I don't have the dates in my head, but there are legal implications coming forward that if you don't adhere, well, we think, I mean, it's not definite yet, I don't think, is it? But that's what everyone thinks is going to happen, is that TCFD is going to become,
more like the norm. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And fundamentally, TCFD will change between now and in 3 years' time. These standards and frameworks, that's the other complex thing, is that you just get your head around it and it moves on. Right. So things will evolve and change in that time as well. Absolutely. It's a moving feast. Okay. And it's for, this is why I think it really does have to come back to, you know, what's the commercial imperative here? What's material to our business? What is it we're trying to achieve? And then a little bit more agnostic of the frameworks that are around all of this, you're able to kind of ride the storm, as it were.
And what's the role of the comms person in all this then? Because it's one of those things, ESG, and I don't think anyone really owns ESG within a company, but the comms person has a big responsibility, right? Just talk us through how you've seen that over the last little while, from an in-house perspective, I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the key starting point is engagement. You know, what comms people are brilliant at is engaging with different stakeholders of different types and a different level. So internally within an organization, having that engagement to understand why the organization is beginning to move along this journey, what's important to it, but also being the ears to engaging with lots of the different stakeholders. So understanding the public policy drivers and stakeholder perspective from outside the organization, understanding where customers are coming from on this, whether that's consumers or B2B. I think comms sit at the intersection of an awful lot of insight, and they can bring that to bear and help really inform the strategy. So that's the first piece to do, is to make sure the strategy is relevant to the stakeholders, and comms have got a really strong role there. Then when it comes to actually implementing the strategy, engagement is even more important. So helping from an internal comms perspective to get employees to understand why it's a living, breathing thing that's authentic and happening in that organization, as well as all of the external comms that you would expect. So clearly articulating the strategy, having clear messages around the narrative, having case studies and proof points as part of, for example, a microsite on the company's website. And when you come round to that annual reporting time of year, making sure that the new and refreshed sustainability narrative is part of the business strategy. It's not just, you know, a few pages shoved in at the back of the report, that this is actually something that's woven into how the business thinks and operates. Those are all jobs for comms to do. And all jobs that we're used to doing day in, day out. It's just bringing it through a slightly different lens and ensuring that it's always stakeholder led.
Right. And just to confirm, you see that as something that comms people can do, not just in listed companies, but also in private companies as well?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because comms people are brilliant at asking the questions. You know, you don't need to have all of the answers. You don't need to know the difference between a gigawatt and a terawatt on year one, on day one, if you know, but you need to be able to speak to the engineers who do know that information and be able to translate that into language that other stakeholders surrounding that business will understand. So I think, you know, I would urge anyone working in comms right now to get a decent level of literacy as far as all of these different terms, all the different standards, what we're actually talking about by science-based targets actually means. But then just do a lot of listening and be ready to engage with all different levels of your organization in order to really understand where the business is coming from on all these different topics.
Right. And clearly the management consultancies are all over ESG as well, and as are the accountancy firms. Where do you see the role of the comms agency in that? Is it about communicating good ESG performance, or are you guys trying to go a little bit deeper than that?
I think it's definitely deeper than that. I think it is back to that engagement piece. So yes, of course, we can communicate the performance, almost at the middle and the end of the cycle. But actually, if comms are sitting, gathering the rich insights from all the different audiences that sit around a business and help inform the strategy, it's going to be a much more powerful strategy than something that arguably could end up being a bit more theoretical. I think the comms people kind of ground it in reality and make sure that when you get to that output point and you are communicating the strategy, it's something that's going to really resonate with the different stakeholders that have an interest in that business.
Right. And finally, one of the things that surprised me when we spoke was that some of the sectors like mining, financial services, tobacco, I guess those regulated sectors, you said were actually ahead in terms of what they're doing with ESG than some of the, what we might think of the softer sectors like technology. Just talk us through why that is.
Fundamentally, it's because they've had to be. You know, they've had so much focus on their license to operate. When you think of what happened in the banking crisis and what that resulted in for the financial services sector, or you think of what's happened in tobacco, just in the 20 years of my career, how tobacco communications has had to increase and move on. So fundamentally, actually, some really interesting lessons to be learned from some of those sectors that really have got this governance piece nailed down. Otherwise, they wouldn't be able to continue to attract investment. So they have actually, conversely, and it seems ironically, but they've really led the charge on some of this stuff. And there's a lot of very interesting case studies and information to really be learned from those organisations that have already been through it, borne some of the scars along the way, and actually really delivered some best practice as far as this stuff is concerned. It's not without its controversy, of course, and I can understand that. And there are some examples of businesses that on paper look to be very well governed and have still had governance failures. But I think fundamentally, this is about ensuring a license to operate. And in those sectors where that's been under question, they've really had to get this clear, and they've had to make clear their broader purpose and their broader commitments to being serious about getting the governance piece right.
Yeah. Victoria Cross, Managing Partner of Instinctive, thanks so much for coming on the show.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And as I say, if you enjoyed that, you want to know more about ESG, we've got a webinar coming up on what is your ESG risk on April the 28th, and all the details for that are on the homepage of PRMoment.com. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for listening to the PR Moment podcast, produced in association with the Marketeers Network.
If you'd enjoyed the show, please do review us on iTunes and give us a decent rating.